Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is a member of the Blackjack Hall of Fame, although primarily he's known as an attorney who takes a lot of gambling cases. We'll be talking to Bob Nersessian in a few minutes. On last week's show, we said something that was incorrect. Richard actually said it, but he had no way of knowing at the time. It was
hard
wrong
to believe.
I knew, but I didn't speak up because I didn't process what he said fast enough. We were talking about the video poker cheating incident, where the players figured out a system of button moves that would allow a jackpot earned at, say, dollars to be paid off at $10. We were talking about how these players could have milked this for a lot more than they actually did. Richard's comment was that they should have hit one jackpot in a casino in a day and then move on, coming back to the original casino several days or months later. That way it could have lasted a pretty long time. While this struck me as being accurate when he said it, upon reflection, I don't think this would have worked so well. In 2012, which is when all this took place, very few casinos activated the double-up feature, except by special player request, and very few players requested it. Even a guy who came in once a month to a place, it wouldn't take long to notice the pattern that when he requests the double-up feature being turned on, he hits a jackpot in 30 minutes, then he leaves. And nobody else asks for the double-up feature all month long, and then he comes back, asks for it turned on again, hits another big jackpot, and then leaves. That would be a pattern that wouldn't be too hard to for the casino to figure out. That said, it does seem like they could have milked it for more than they did, but it wouldn't have been as easy as they implied last week. Richard?
Well, I disagree with you. First of all, I don't like the categorization of calling it the video poker cheating case. I'm not convinced they were cheating at all. I don't consider what they did to be cheating. But second of all, so I gather what you're saying is that if I ask for the double up feature to be turned on, as soon as I get up from the machine, it's going to be turned back off again, that someone will come by and turn it back off, and then I would have to come in and ask for it to be turned on again. Now, even if it were true that maybe they do turn it off at some point once it's been turned on, although I kind of find that hard to believe that the employees would be that diligent, I would be making enough money where I could easily afford to give someone a few hundred bucks to go in and say, hey, go to that machine and ask for the double-up feature to be turned on and play it for an hour. And I'll give you the money to play it for an hour, betting quarters or whatever. And now they get up from the machine, and now I go in and sit down and play it and hit my jackpot and move on.
Well, you might be more clever about this than I am.
You know, when you're making basically unlimited money, you can afford a lot of cover.
All right, good. Good comeback. On a related subject, a listener emailed me about this case, which I consider cheating. Richard doesn't. He asked, number one, if I would have taken advantage of that bug had I become aware of it. And if so, would I use my player's card while playing? After all, I need to show ID for the W2G, so that the casino would know who I was. It would basically be impossible for me to discover it. It requires hitting buttons in a certain order, and I don't know how I would find that. I don't go around hitting random sequences of buttons. When I play, it's always max coins, pick the cards to hold, and then hit the draw button. Another factor is that I'm not really interested in going to prison and developing a close personal relationship with an inmate named Bubba. My life works pretty well right now, and to risk what I have for some more money, which isn't that important to me, and add to the real chance that I would be incarcerated, no thank you. I know the two guys got off scot-free and got to keep the money, but it didn't have to turn out that way. There's some chance that I would cross some line that even Bob Nersessian couldn't keep me out of jail. No thanks. But if I were playing, I would not use a player's card. I would not want a record of how many hands I played and how much I won, because it's going to consistently show something like $400 coin in and $8,000 coin out. And the next time, $600 coin in and $10,000 coin out. And the next time, $200 coin in and $7,000 coin out. And this pattern is really recognizable to the casino. And so if I don't have a player's card, they know what my coin out is, but they don't know what my coin in is. Richard.
Yeah, I mean, this is just ludicrous. I mean, again, you're making unlimited money. I mean, whatever amount you want, and you're going to use a card so you can get a free buffet or something? I mean,
some of the buffets are pretty good, though.
Yeah, jeez. I don't know. Some just mind-boggling to me that anybody would want to use a card in that situation.
Change subjects. There's a car service called Uber, U-B-E-R. It's found in many cities around the country and the world, and they're trying to get it into Las Vegas, so far unsuccessfully. Richard, what do you know about this?
I just saw the articles that Las Vegas is now, I guess, they're raising the taxi rates here 8%, making it the second most expensive taxi city in the United States. And I hear many complaints from people about the taxis in Vegas. So I was just happy to see that Uber is trying to get in here. I think it's a great service. Competition is a good thing. And, I'm a fan.
I was surprised at the rates going up. There are a lot of long taxis in line at many times of the day. I suppose at peak hours, you have to wait for a cab. But it seems to me there's excess cabs in Las Vegas, and that shouldn't justify prices going up. All right. OSN, Oregon Surveilling Networks. They report on counters and other people casinos don't want. Things have changed there. Richard, what's happening here?
Well, yeah, I initially had heard that Jeff Murphy, who I guess was one of the founders of it, and now I believe is in surveillance at the Cosmo, I heard he had distanced himself from OSN and had started a new service called Red Hand. But now it appears that actually it may just still be OSN and they've changed their name to Red Hand. I don't know. There's a Red Hand. Now, if you go to the OSN website, it says Red Hand now.
It's my understanding that it became Red Hand.
So they just changed names.
That's what I heard.
Okay. So I
but
wasn't...
you say they, and that's the problem, is you try and track down a they and you can't find it.
Right.
You can't find them.
Right.
All right, that voice you're hearing is Bob Nersessian. Bob is arguably our most popular guest on the show. We've learned a lot about...
Oh, don't change off the script because of me. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have interrupted.
No, it's better that you... I knew you wanted to jump in when we were talking about the video poker. We'll come back right back.
I did
to
a
that.
Little bit.
Yeah, we'll come back
All
to
right.
that.
Now, we've learned a lot about legal issues from him. So, Bob Nersessian, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
You can't believe what a pleasure it is to be here when you guys invite me, but I think I'm wearing my welcome a little thin.
Not close yet.
Yeah, but no.
Not close yet. What are you doing next week? On this OSN, at least part of they collect driver's licenses, passports. So one of the players asked us, is this legal to collect driver's license and passport numbers and distribute it to casinos?
Well, they actually have scans. They have scans of the driver's license that they not only they distribute it to whoever, I guess, is a member. Anybody can log in and see those scans.
Okay. In a couple of states, you could probably throw together an invasion of privacy claim for publishing that information. Not all states. One of the things that might change that, though, is if your identification was stolen from you or surreptitiously taken by someone, or if they got it through, if the casino got it through inappropriate means and then provided it to OSN, you could probably stretch that out into a cause of action in pretty much all states.
But if they got it by issuing you a player's card or something like that?
Well, see, there's the problem with going and applying for a player's card. You permissively handed over that information or even that scan, and you didn't put any restrictions on it when you did so.
Now, what about when, like, there are a lot of these casinos in the Midwest where to enter the casino, you have to show an ID. And they stick it under something, and I don't know if they're taking a picture of it or what. Are you giving them permission to photograph your ID when you enter that casino?
Wow. I thought you guys liked having me on the show.
We do.
You mean if we ask too tough of questions?
I throw up my hands and go, God, guess where my kids are going to college this year? No, I don't know the answer to that question. I've researched the idea of publishing stolen identification or identification taken against permission, and I can make a cause of action out of that, I believe, although you're not going to get a whole lot of money. But I think on the other end, what you're talking about is essentially those things where you're giving up information, to buy something or something, and these companies sell that list to all the people, and nobody's suing them, and I'm just going back to practicalities, and that sounds like a real uphill battle to put together. I don't see a real probability or an expected value or a cost-benefit analysis on any level that makes going after these people worthwhile. But I've been wrong before, and I would welcome to see another attorney try and do that.
Same idea with their Social Security number? I mean, because I thought there were credit reporting laws.
There are credit reporting laws, and I got in an argument with another guy on this at one of the symposiums I gave or was speaking at, and you really don't have an answer to this question. The courts, when they've looked at it, said no, credit reporting laws don't even apply to these people. But I read the statutes and I say, why not? And oftentimes that information is gotten in connection with what is called casino credit. And yet, from my scant knowledge on this, they've carved out exceptions for casinos and the gaming industry. Do I like these purported services that go and throw people's names around? No. And you come to me and they've called you a cheater and that word is in there, and I'll sue them for you. But right now, that seems to be about the threshold. Oh, and you also have to not be a cheater.
Well, yeah. yeah. The truth is a good defense,
yeah,
right?
It's always a defense.
So what about a casino that, for example, you pull up into the parking lot, they grab your license plate number, and they call the local police and say, hey, whose car is this? And the police are giving them that information.
Okay, you've glommed onto something that I've had a real problem with for a long time, and I've even been looking for a while right case. The right case never showed up. The police here in town would have, and I think this is stopped now, although I can't be positive, because this kind of stuff works behind the scenes, if you will, but there was somebody on every shift with every casino in town in security that had an in to essentially call Metro and have a scope run on a person and get that information back. And I thought that that cooperation was illegal in the extreme, unconstitutional, state action, invasion of privacy, and a number of other things. The police, I do know, absolutely loved it. There have been programs with hotels as well, where the police want as many names with information as they can get for tourists and gamblers and people in this town so that they can just run makes. They love the concept of, we have somebody here, we don't know who they are, but there's warrants out all over the place. Give us every name you can with all the information you can, or wherever we can, we'll require you to do this. And that way we get to run stuff. And if we run 1,000 names, that's just 1,000 little clicks on a computer. If two of them come back with a warrant, wow, we just made out. That's police. That's the police mentality. Nobody thinks about the 998 other people who are entitled to their privacy who just had it invaded through that process. I don't think that the police are doing it any longer, or gaming, I believe, also had a system with the casinos where they could get a scope run or a make, to use the term that is common throughout the country, run on anybody they asked about. And that case never made it to me with the right facts while I wanted it. So it's not tested yet, and I don't know that it will be tested, because my latest information is they have stopped doing it.
Now, I've read a number of articles. A number of states are talking about the casinos, when you win something, basically for back child support, things like that, where they parents who owe back child support, they hit a jackpot and somehow that gets reported and the money gets held up because of, you haven't read these articles?
You know, not really. I think I've probably, my reading list stacks to the roof and back down.
These are mostly back east that where I'm reading about this kind
of. I think there was a state or two that when you had to fill out reports analogous to a CTR or something like that for state purposes, it went through a database checking for the stuff you're talking about, and then would result in the seizure. And I think what you should do, and I can't tell you even which state or states it is, but if you're an advantage gambler or even any kind of gambler and you have
that issue.
Come here and play.
Come here to Vegas.
Yeah, come to Vegas. In fact, everybody listening nationwide on the internet, come to Vegas. We are the best. Does anybody doubt that?
I didn't know you worked for the Chamber of Commerce. Now, let's talk about Phil Ivey.
Who?
Wait, we don't want to go back to the video poker before we get to Phil Ivey?
We can.
Maybe we should. Yeah.
No, since I was going to. I'm not sure I even know what case that was. If you want to talk about Phil, talk about Phil.
All right. We'll pretend like it's our show. All right. Now, the facts of the Ed sorting were reasonably well known, but a few weeks ago, a London judge ruled that Ivey was cheating. We got several questions about this. First, is the appeal process in England similar to the way it is in the United States?
It's similar in that a higher court looks at what a lower court did and determines if it matched what the law says. But in England, you do not ordinarily, in a civil case, have an appeal as of right. It is an appeal by permission. You apply first to the trial court, and then if the trial court does not grant permission, then you apply to the appellate court. That's my understanding of the English system.
Do you have any sense as to Ivey's chances on appeal?
Well, first, I'm not even sure about his chances on getting permission to appeal. There's a modality that is occurring here, is the concept that if an appellate court is going to take this, if you read the Ivey decision, that judge said, no court's ever decided this before, and I'm sort of stuck with coming up with a decision. In a lot of, from a logical perspective, that says, oh, this is a case where we need a higher court to evaluate it so we get a more solid law. oftentimes in appellate jurisdiction, the appellate court will look at something like that and go, wow, that's a snake in a basket, and I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. So you don't know what would happen, and you don't have you can't really tell whether or not the appellate court would want the appeal. There's things that balance each way. Concerning the results on appeal, I got to tell you, even though I disagree with the decision, I do not find that decision from that British judge to be poorly reasoned. I take issue with plenty of the stuff that he talks about, but I also think he got other stuff absolutely right. I'm surprised by some of the stuff I saw. For example, as you read the decision, you find out that both the plaintiff and the defendant presented to the court were essentially surveys of what is cheating and what is not cheating. And how curious is that, that we run the law and a country that is so steeped in the rule of law has lawyers that think, okay, the right presentation is to present the court with a poll. That's antithetical to the rule of law. That's antithetical to the entire concept of Western civilization and our laws, and we get our laws from Great Britain. So, but the judge did say, I'm not going to look at that. He got it.
Yeah.
The craziest part to me, though, was that you had the casinos expert saying, essentially, well, we surveyed 9 casinos, and 8 of them thought this was cheating.
Go figure.
Oh, yeah, surprise.
Yeah.
And they thought that was going to sway the court.
Well, Elliot Jacobson talked to hundreds of advantage players, and they didn't think it was cheating.
Okay.
What a surprise.
Yeah, there's the same converse. Or there it is in the converse. It's that. So other things on the decision that I found troubling were, for example, the judge relied on statutes to determine what the common law rule was, which I don't, this is going to bore the devil out of your listeners, but the common law is the law that reason has made up and the courts have established. It's court-made law. Statutory law is made by legislatures. You don't look at statutory law for common law. You look at court cases for common law. The judge also said that there's no history to determine what cheating is. There is plenty of history that says wagering is a contract. There's probably 100 cases in the English reports and 1,000 cases in the American reporters. Wagering is a contract. Wow, they just defined that whole body of law that you look to for your rules, the common law rules of contract. And then as long as I'm espousing and standing up here on my soapbox, I think that the biggest thing missed, and the judge didn't miss it, he talked about it, and I've talked about it on your show before, this is a game. Now, there's a contract in connection with that game, but a game that includes a competition. It is gambling. Gambling includes poker. Gambling includes horse racing. Well, some people would say poker's not gambling, but, you know, that's...
But it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Potter Stewart definition of pornography. You know it when you see it. Well, you know gambling when you see it, too, and poker's gambling. In any event, you use your wiles at all of those games, but we've gotten away from using wiles on what are commonly thought of as table games and players play them rote, etc. But that's not the case. History says you're allowed to use your wiles at any game. What you're not allowed to do is cheat, which is to alter the cards, or, you know, nobody would doubt that throwing in an extra ace or pass posting or any of those other things that actually involve the player manipulating their own odds through things that are not allowed in the game. But that's not what these people did. They manipulated through logic and their appearances, etc., a dealer to do something different. So I don't know that this judge also considered the unintended consequences of his decision, because he talked about what they were doing being an ill practice, and therefore an ill practice as defined under historic statutes is cheating. if you are cheating, you have violated the terms of the game and you can't collect, therefore no collection. But I want to highlight on that term ill practice, because he highlighted on it in this decision. I don't think American jurisprudence will accept that decision. I don't know that this comes over the pond, if you will. But what we have with that ill practice is a concept that can now be used the other way too. And the other thing we don't have is any definition or standard for what an ill practice is. So now anytime a player wins and the casino still has their money, there will be a colorable ability for the casino to say, I'm not paying you. On the converse, if ill practice is cheating, this is a decision that will provide precedent in Western civilization, which includes the United States, which is a common law jurisdiction, that when they feed you drinks and bring new markers to the table, they've undertaken an ill practice. And under the Ivy decision, you can probably say, I don't owe those markers. And I gotta believe that nobody, including this judge, ever thought of that. But I think it's right on point with his decision. And I think that unless this is fixed, there's going to be some pretty gross ramifications around all common law countries if this standard is accepted.
Well, he also mentioned deception, that there was deception involved. And, I mean, so it would seem to me every poker player that ever loses because somebody bluffed him can say, I don't have to pay because there was deception.
If I didn't get to that point, I apologize. That was part of my overly long thought that probably got rolled over, because you're absolutely right. This is what I'm talking about with this being a competition. Deception is part of the game. Affectations are part of the game. You know, if you want somebody to think you got a bad hand, you slap yourself on the forehead. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's cheating, or might be now.
That
oh,
might be
holy
a,
crud.
That might be a tell we could pick up on after a while.
Well, you can watch me at a poker game. Never mind.
Well, no, you're in the Blackjack Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but I've never left a table with a dime.
Table games players, I mean, often will act like they're drunk, right? So, mm-hmm. so that the casino will be less suspicious of them, right? Well, that's deception. So now they would be able to say, we don't have to pay. You deceived us.
I understand. Or what if...
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's the unintended consequences of
Think about what a casino does to get a marker out, the one I was talking about, an extra marker out to a whale or a high roller, and what they feed them in the way of drinks and stuff. They deal with people who are arguably of diminished capacity, and they put them there on purpose because they want to lay out an extra marker. This decision says, wow, that's cheating.
Right.
Okay.
Well, there's that famous Steve Sears story where they had the high roller that was up $6 million, and they told him the plane, something was wrong with the plane, and they wouldn't be able to leave until the next day. Again, that would be cheating. You know, they lied to him about the plane to keep him in town. Bob, you were mentioning that, first of all, I want to say for our listeners that you can read the judgment. I have it up on my site at richardmunchkin.com if you want to read the judgment. There's some really interesting stuff in there. And, Bob, uh-huh. you had some points you wanted to make about what surprised you when you were reading the judgment.
Yeah. The Ivy asked for particular make of cards. Dealt
not with, true in the London case.
Yeah.
He was waiting for that set. He didn't ask for it, I don't believe.
And so there were several conditions. But what surprised me is he didn't ask for them all up front. What they did ask for him was a private table and a Mandarin-speaking dealer. And as they went on, you know, Ivy... So the first couple shoes were played on the level. And when when he won a shoe, he says, I want to keep the same deck.
Right.
Because I've been winning with it. And so that seemed like a reasonable request, so they did okay.
They were, I just want to point out, you know, a lot of the articles make a big deal about the Jamaica cards. They were not Jamaica cards in London. They were Angel cards.
Correct. And so this wasn't a list of demands up front. This was a gradual list of demands that he put in. So good gamesmanship on both Ivy and his partner as to put him in. If he gave all the list of demands up front, then the guys upstairs have 48 hours to think about them and to decide, you know, do we do or do we don't. And but when they come in one at a time to the dealer, and each one doesn't seem that
right. And the judge mentioned that they were acting like they were superstitious, like wearing Crockford's hats. And you know, they had a bunch of shtick, you know, to act like they were, you know, superstitious gamblers, and the judge had a problem with that.
They were like, lucky Crockford's hats.
Yeah, they were lucky Crockford's hats. They were lucky cards. They wanted a shuffling machine because that was luckier than if the dealer shuffled the cards, right? I mean, and you would think what casino would not want to use a shuffling machine? I mean,
incidentally, as you read that and as you're talking about this, don't you find about, eight things that are somewhat still secret in the advantage gambling area that I would never say because I learned them from a client, but they're published here in the decision?
Well, but the stuff that's been published on the internet now about all of this stuff is, you know, it's just everywhere now.
Well, here it is. It's out here in a public record. Let me ask you this. Do you think every casino out there understands that a shuffle machine is a danger and not a benefit?
Well,
now they do. I just said it out loud.
but actually, it isn't. I mean,
well, it isn't if you know how to prevent it. And this case also tells you how to prevent it from being.
Yeah,
a danger.
But so does, you know, the website that we were of the, you know, of the guy, you know, the expert witness. I mean, he publishes all kinds of stuff about this on his website. So this is one of those moves that, you know, will be no good for another, you know, 10 or 15 years until everybody forgets about it again.
All right. Does this have any relevance at all to the Atlantic City case, which is similar?
The Atlantic City lawyers immediately petitioned the court to accept this ruling. Now, I would assume if it had gone the other way, Ivy's lawyers would have done the same thing. Does the court care about the case in England?
Well, it is persuasive precedent. People don't realize this, and most lawyers practicing very rarely do this as well. But in the gambling area, I have cited repeatedly British Commonwealth cases to support positions I have. I've cited, I think you had something to do with Blackjack Forum, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've cited your write-up on Tommy Hyland in Canada. And that court's decision, actually, I've cited that court's decision, and my site is to Blackjack Forum, because that's where it is.
I didn't write that article. Arnold wrote that,
Okay. Yeah. There's somebody who belongs in the Blackjack Hall of Fame.
Arnold Snyder?
And you too. Isn't he there?
Yeah, he's there.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm comparing to me like I'm still wondering why I'm there. So it is persuasive precedent, I would suggest, and hopefully there are lawyers involved in that at least will take up some of my opinions or maybe look at them and maybe even hopefully listen to this show a little bit. But while this is persuasive precedent, I think the biggest error this court made is to reach a conclusion that there is something called common law cheating that is a legal doctrine that allows you to not pay a wager. There are contract law already has the reasons, and part of those reasons, and I'm going to highlight that, include usage of trade and common practices in an industry. And those are read into contracts, and gamesmanship is part of the wagering contract. The judge even recognized that and then failed to apply it.
All right.
You know what? I just want to add one other thing. The thing that I found most fascinating about the judgment was that the way basically it got found out was some guy who worked at the casino had a grandfather who was a magician that had taught him some card trick when he was a kid, where he turned all the cards one way and you know, when he picked a card, it went in the other way. And the guy remembered this magic trick that his grandfather had done. And that's basically how they found out that Ivy had been playing what Ivy had been doing.
Hey, can I swear on your show?
No. We're on live radio.
Okay. Well, then that's bullpucky.
Bullpucky. All right. Okay. That's not on the list of seven words.
Yeah.
And the reason it is because edge sorting has been published for years and years and years. And once it starts getting looked at, I'm never surprised by how ignorant casino personnel are, or how ignorant even gaming government personnel are about what's going on and how hard it is for them to discover it. But it is not so hard that you can watch what Phil was doing at that table, looking for how it was working after you discovered it happened, and not find it.
But not only that. So I mean, he had done this in Macau. He had done it to places in Las Vegas. And Bill Zender had already written about it before he went and played in Atlantic City and in
this is what I'm saying. It's been published. And
yeah,
Bill it's in Bill Zender's
talking about the actual move where he actually exactly what they did.
Oh.
Bill Zender wrote about exactly what they did here
talking
in Las Vegas
into it?
Before it ever happened in Atlantic City and London. And do they not read? I mean, do they not pay attention to their own industry? And
I haven't seen. This is in Forte's book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that it's in Zender's.
It's in John Scarney's book that was written in the 60s.
Well, and Zender's first book for game protection for the casino executive or whatever it
is. Card counting for the casino executive.
Yeah, well, it's in. Okay. His second book then also included other ideas.
Yeah, advantage play for the casino.
Yes, and edge sorting was in there. And that book's from what, 89?
Yeah, I don't remember, but you know? Yeah.
So it's not like it. Well, same thing. So since it's not like some miracle, this guy is talking about his grandpa and the card trick to try and put some down-home spin on it for the judge. And to make it look like this is not something that we would normally see. Of course, once they saw and once they looked at the tapes, they knew. Another thing that surprises me, and this was an oh holy bull pucky moment,
yeah.
Or an oh holy pucky moment, is they have audio on their tables.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In
the
England.
English casinos have audio on. Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Well, professional players know it.
Oh, I didn't know it.
Yeah.
I'm like, goodness gracious, where did that come from?
Yep.
All right. Different subject.
Seven.
Oh, my God. We're almost out of time. And we
asset forfeiture. Before you started coming on the show, I was generally unaware that police across the country stop cars, search them for money, and confiscate the money.
Our highway robbers.
Now I'm seeing such cases all over the place. Are these cases more common than they were, say, 5 years ago? Or is it just that I'm more aware of it than I was 5 years ago?
You're more aware of it than you were 5 years ago. It's been going on forever. I mean, the entire concept goes back to the privateers and the Revolutionary War, and asset forfeiture has always been there. Then in the 80s, it became a moneymaker for the government as the drug industry grew. They saw this as a tool, and that's when it exploded. And you have seen it, you just haven't noticed it. I'm going to give you an example, I think, from the 80s that made national news, and that was the charter plane with the pot seed in the do you recall this now?
I was shaking my head. No.
Yes. Okay. That doesn't work, does it?
Well, shaking your head works.
Okay. Well, the federal government tried to forfeit an entire aircraft and another time a yacht, big one, because somebody, unknown who, was careless enough on those methods of transportation to leave some remnants of cannabis. Oh, holy crud. Let's get us a yacht because of it's not called a joint. What's the little short
roach?
Joint? A roach.
So I've heard.
See, yeah, me too. Obviously, I've never had experience because I didn't know the word.
All right. Now, if you're carrying money and you're driving across the country, I'm assuming $1,000 is a pretty safe amount as normal people could have that, whatever that means. I'm assuming $50,000 is a lot. Is there a number?
Nope.
So would $5,000 probably be too much?
Probably not, but $1,000 might still get taken.
Yeah, it also depends on your ethnicity and your age, okay. Right? I mean, there were I heard many cases in Texas and Louisiana where they were targeting Hispanics, and they would take $1,500 or, you know, small amounts because, you know, they knew that there was very little chance that the people would try to get the money back.
So again, the small amounts. And I also understand that if you give them any indication that you're somebody who would have a lot of money in the car, even if they know where that's from, and I would cite the Fiore case, the one we've talked about before, once they know you have a lot of money, you're going to find somebody who's going to try and take it and say that you're a drug dealer or you're a money launderer or something along those lines. I think there was somebody named Lawrence that had a question that you promised you were going to ask.
I was just going to say, yes, our producer wanted to know if they pull you over and say, are you carrying a lot of money, is it okay to lie and say no?
No.
So what should you say?
Is it wise to say yes? No. What you should say, and you should be consistent with this right from the very beginning, here's my license. Here's my registration. Where are you going? Here's my license. Here's my registration. What time did you start out on the road? Here's my license. Here's my registration. Are you married? Here's my license. Here's my registration. Okay? Be the guy who got picked up by the Nazis after he jumped out of his airplane in World War II. Name, rank, and serial number. If you have a large amount of money in your car, that should be it. Don't fall into any circumstance where you're in a conversation with this guy. Don't try to look like his friend. Don't try to schmooze him away from your car. Okay? Now, it sounds like as I say that, that may be an indication to him that there's something he should look at. It might be. Okay? But at least then you have the colorable statement that I never gave him any reason because all I did was cooperate and provide him what I was supposed to provide him, and refusal to answer questions, since it is a constitutional right, can never be grounds for a further search. There's plenty of case law on that. So your answer is, here's my license, here's my registration. Seriously.
Good.
So now now we know they have you get out of the car and they say, you don't mind if we search the car. You say, absolutely, I do not give you permission
never,
to search the car.
Never, ever, ever. The concept that you giving permission is something that they will say, oh, this guy obviously has nothing to hide. He's going to give us permission. Fails absolutely.
Right. So my question is, now they bring the dog, they make the dog bark, they say, now we have probable cause. They still have to get a warrant, right? Or can they just start searching? Because it seems like they play this trick and they say, oh, well, now we have probable cause, we can get a warrant. But doesn't that mean they have to go actually get the warrant before they can search the car?
Some states, some circuits.
So in other words, you still shouldn't give permission when the dog barks. You should say, okay, go get the warrant.
God, say get the warrant or as they're looking at you and asking you questions and talking to you, you go, you have my license, you have my registration. Tick-A-Lock, to use Laverne from Laverne and Shirley's little thing, and make that little motion next to your mouth that nothing else is coming out.
Now, I referred, I got calls from the show Inside Edition, and they wanted to do a show about this and put hidden cameras in a car. I recommended I-40 in northern Arizona for their for their target. I recommended that they call you, actually, so I'm wondering if they got a hold of you. And
Actually, I've talked to a couple of different agencies about that, so probably. Not agencies.
TV shows.
They're all interested, but you know they don't really need to do this because they I hate citing this as a source, but they can go on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay? They're out there. Or just go look in the newspapers. Oh my goodness, the stuff that these people do.
Well, they also wanted footage of they were doing a show about card counters being manhandled by security, and they wanted footage. And I said, I don't have footage, but you would have footage from court cases if you have any that did not have non-disclosures attached to them.
Really?
Yeah. I told them to go to you.
and most of my stuff is available in the public record. But other than that, I have – so go onto a website. Search the cases I've done, hire a private detective or one of these court search people, and see if there's videos in any of these cases I've done, because it's not up to me to help you with it, but I can't close down a public record.
That's good. A good tip.
So since Nurse Essien is very cooperative right now, I'm going to do some commercials. We'll be back. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. October promotion is called the $600,000 Monster Money. There will be casino-wide progressives. It begins $10,000 and keeps expanding until it's hit, which must be before $25,000. In addition to the winner, every player actively playing with a player's card inserted when the progressive goes off receives $25 in free play. A new progressive immediately begins at $10,000. In addition, at 11 a.m. every day, another progressive starts at $1,000. And must be hit by 2,500. When it hits, it stays down until 11 a.m. the next day, when it starts again at 1,000. The free video poker class this next week is Bonus Deuces. This is a game that combines Deuces Wild with Bonus Poker. You get extra credits for five of a kinds, especially five aces, and you pay for this by you only get five coins for a straight rather than a more typical 10. The class begins at noon in the Grandview Lounge. And everyone at least 21 years of age is welcome. At the Palms, the weekly drawing in October happens on Saturday rather than Friday. $10,000 each week is shared among 10 winners with the first prize of $3,500. You don't need to be there to win, but you need to collect your prize by midnight or it evaporates. Five times drawing entries, Friday and Saturday night, 8 to midnight. Two times entries all day, Sunday and Tuesday. PFP, Play for Prizes, Monday through Friday. For the rest of this month through Halloween is Kohl's gift cards. Kohl's is K-O-H-L apostrophe S. They are a department store. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to practice a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. You can get the strategy from me or Wizard of Oz website, but if you want correction, go to videopoker.com. For most players, you have no idea how badly you play until you have a computer program that corrects you on your plays. They have contests every week. The game this week is Triple Play Dream Card. All right. We mentioned Halloween, and it's going to be... next week and the next week. Munchkin teased me, and he said he has a great Halloween story. So I love Munchkin's stories, and so Bob likes his stories too. So, Richard, what's your Halloween story?
Well, when you emailed me about it, you were talking about the idea of wearing a costume in the casino.
Yes.
So back you know, 35 years ago, I was a dealer and a part-time floor man. And on Halloween, a spooking team came into the casino with the spook literally made up as a spook. And
Now, a spooking team is like hole carding, except the spook is behind the dealer across the pit.
Across the pit. And back in the old days, the dealer used to lift up the 10 or ace to check under it. They didn't have those little peeking devices. So the spook would be on the opposite side of the pit and signal to the guy. And I happened to be on the floor that night, and I saw the two guys come into the casino together and go in opposite directions and work their way around the pit. And, you know, the BP sat down dressed as a pirate on one of the games in my pit, and the spook came from the other direction to the behind the table across the pit. And, you know, I just, all I did was I moved right into the eye line of the spook, blocking his view until he had to look at me. And I just looked him at him in the eye, and I said, please don't. And if he wasn't white already, he turned white and turned around and walked straight back out the door. So, yeah, that was my spooking story.
All right. Now, in terms of costumes at the table, some casinos won't let you wear masks or certain types of makeup when you're playing table games, but other casinos will let you. So,
yeah, it just depends on the joint.
And you can do this for several days. I mean, Halloween officially is Friday, but there will be people in costumes all next week, or certainly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And if you have a sexy nurse costume girl with you, you'll probably do better, get more mileage out of that.
I think if you were downtown right now and checking out the Life is Beautiful Festival, you'd think most of those people were in costumes too, or a lot of them. So you could even do it today.
Yeah, the downtown is quite busy this weekend. Now, we got about a minute and a half to go. We were talking about the police seizing assets in Clark County itself. I don't hear of these things where the police seize gamblers' money. I'm assuming the Chamber of Commerce says we need these gamblers to come in, and they have money as they go from casino to casino.
I had a friend stopped on his way from Mesquite, and there was another guy being searched on the other side of the highway between here and Mesquite. So you would think they would be better about it around Las Vegas, but it does happen.
Does he know details of that search?
I don't know. I have not seen anything on Nevada highways. I do know of some instances where there's been some casino seizures on what was claimed to be suspicion of this type of thing with participation of government authorities. But as of this point, at least the ones I know of, that money got returned.
Certainly the airport here. You're much safer in the Las Vegas airport with a large amount of cash than, you know, than any other airport.
Yes. You're certainly allowed to bring money in, and you're even allowed to take money out.
Yeah,
but watch where you're landing.
Are there particular airports you would say definitely don't fly into Omaha or something? I just made that up.
Well, just from my own anecdotal experience,
we're going
to
hold that question for next time. But Atlanta. Good. All right. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.